Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three Pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome back to the Big Three podcast. My name is Mark. I'm the senior pastor here at Guymere Baptist Church and your host for the next half hour as we answer three big questions from Sunday's sermon. We are continuing in our series following the Encounter series, the latest resource by Olive Tree Media, looking at the encounters that Jesus had with people then and now. And our life groups during the week are focusing primarily on Jesus' encounters with people now. And on Sundays, we're focusing on the encounters that Jesus had with people in the gospel accounts. And on Sunday, I preached from Luke chapter 8 and the encounter that Jesus has with the woman who was suffering from the bleed, who comes up behind him in the crowd as they're making their way to Jairus' house because Jairus' daughter is dying. And this woman touches Jesus' robe, the edge of his cloak, and is healed, and then has an interaction with Jesus where he tells her that her faith has made her well. And on Sunday, I focused on the four stories that surround it. I mean, there's the one that it's embedded in, right? As I said, they're on their way to Jairus' house. It begins with Jairus' pleading for Jesus to come. It ends with Jesus raising Jairus' daughter to life. And in between is the story of the woman. But the day begins with Jesus calming the storm, landing on the other side of the Sea of Galilee and casting out the legion of demons and then returning. The way in which it's framed up, it all happens on one day. And so I kind of wove these four stories together a little bit, focusing on some of the similarities and some of the lessons that are found within it, particularly wrapped around how we respond to Jesus and to his power. And the questions reflect some of that weaving over the course of Sunday's sermon. So the questions that we're going to be grappling with today are these. First of all, should we encourage people to ask for a demonstration of Jesus' power? If so, how do we do that to foster faith? So I talked a bit about the fact that this woman in particular, the encounter she had with Jesus wasn't the encounter with his power that healed her. It was the conversation with Jesus afterwards. It wasn't just the power that she encountered. It was also his presence. And her response is one of faith. And the people around her, Jairus and the disciples in particular, don't respond the same way to that demonstration of power. So we'll pick that up. It's a good question. Secondly, what is the relationship between Jesus' miracles and faith in the gospel? So that flows kind of nicely from the first question. The relationship between those two things is actually a really important one. There are a couple of places in the gospel accounts where the religious leaders in particular ask Jesus for a sign, which seems odd given that he was doing all the things that he was doing. But it demonstrates for us just how the signs and the wonders that Jesus performed didn't necessarily lead to faith. So we'll talk a bit about the relationship between those two things. And then third, the sermon wove the four stories together. Are there other lessons in these stories that weren't picked up on Sunday, I guess? And the answer is, the short answer is yes, but I'll explore that a little bit more when we get to it. So those are the three questions that we're going to be grappling with today, the opportunity to go a little bit deeper in the story that we looked at on Sunday. The first question, as I said, a really good question to begin with, because what we've been encountering, pardon the pun, in these sermons has been, by and large, the miraculous work of Jesus, right? Whether it's the healing of the leper or the calming of the storm. There's been a number of examples where what we've encountered in part has been his power. And so this question is a good one. Should we encourage people to ask for a demonstration of Jesus' power? But if so, How do we do so in a way that fosters faith? I think the short answer is yes, we should. One of the things that I believe is demonstrated in these four stories in Luke chapter 8 is that Jesus's power, and I believe I touched on this very briefly on Sunday, Jesus's power is available. And it's available to people who don't appear to have a great deal of faith, or even of, I'm not sure how to describe the demoniac, but he basically didn't have the ability to act on his own. The disciples don't have a lot of faith. At least they have I'm not sure what they have, but they're following Jesus. They see him as their master, but they wake him up in the storm, and it appears, at least from Jesus' assessment, that they had no faith that he would be able to fix the situation, and yet he does. The demoniac, as I said, is unable to act for himself. We get the sense that he's been completely overwhelmed by these demonic and evil forces. They seem to be the ones who are interacting with Jesus, not the man himself. And yet, even though he was unable to cry out for help, Jesus nonetheless saves him. The woman touches Jesus. There's intentionality there. And so there's a sense that her faith is more evident. But Jairus comes to Jesus pleading with him to come. But when he finds out that his daughter has died, I think understandably so, he lacks the faith to continue on, right? His messengers who have come from his house basically say, don't bother the teacher anymore, which makes sense unless you had faith that Jesus could overwhelm death itself. So I reckon that illustrates for us that Jesus's power is available not just to those who have tremendous world-altering, mountain-casting faith, but to those who have, well, hardly any faith at all. One of the things that has struck me in some of the stories in the Encounter series that I've watched has been the answers to prayer and the prayers that have been given, shall I say, pre-faith. People who have prayed somewhat indirectly to Jesus, have prayed kind of a vague, open-ended, kind of to anyone prayer, and who have been encountered then by Jesus in the midst of that. And I think that's a wonderful thing. So I think, yes, we should be encouraging people to ask for a demonstration of Jesus's power, to bring healing, to bring guidance, to bring new life, to calm storms, to make a way, whatever it is. I think we should be doing that. But the second part of the question is actually perhaps the more critical one. And I'll get into this a little bit more in the second question as well. But if we encourage people to ask for a demonstration of Jesus' power, how do we do that in a way to foster faith? And I reckon the heart of it really comes down to what I tried to draw out on Sunday, which is that the encounter with Jesus that this woman had was not the encounter with his power. That wasn't the encounter. I actually suggested, you can almost see the scene in your mind, right? As she touches the edge of his cloak and stops, just dead, realizing that she's been healed, and the crowd kind of flows around her and wanders down the street and goes around the corner. And she's left alone, and she goes home and tells her sister, and they share a happy, few moments of tears. And she goes up to Jerusalem the next time there's a festival, and just delights in being able to go into the temple and offer the sacrifices and fulfillment of the vows that she no doubt took, and all that stuff. But the encounter that she had with Jesus was more than just the power. That was life-changing, certainly. But the encounter was when Jesus, draws her out of the crowd, sees this woman who has been invisible for so long, and hears her story. She tells Jesus in the presence of all these people basically what led her to touch his cloak with faith. And his statement to her, daughter, your faith has healed you, is I think the critical encounter. Right? That's the critical encounter. The idea that Jesus is not just powerful. It's more than the fact that Jesus can without breaking a sweat, do all these wonderful things. It's his care. It's his concern, his compassion, his desire for people to be seen and to really hear the good news, right? Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. There's something quite profound about that. And so I think that when we are encouraging people to look for or ask for or plead for a demonstration of Jesus's power, we also want to be encouraging them to know more about who Jesus is. I think that it's the, I can't remember the little phrase off the top of my head, but it's, you know, we want to know the giver, not just the gift. Right. And I think that's true, right? You appreciate the act of power, but it's knowing the giver that's important. And I think that that's the crux of it. We really want to encourage people as they are perhaps reaching out to Jesus for the first time or for, the thousandth time, that we want to draw people back to that relationship with Jesus. That's a really important piece. And it plays into the next question. So I'm going to stop there. And hopefully these two questions kind of work together to answer themselves or something. I'm not sure what I'm trying to say there. But I think the second question will go a little bit more deeply into that. So let's turn to that now. So the second question carries on from the first. What is the relationship between Jesus's miracles and faith in the Gospels? And as I said at the very outset, that's a really key theme in the Gospel accounts. Jesus is, at least in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, who all tell the story from a very similar perspective. They, in the Synoptic accounts, Jesus is always on the lookout for faith. Like, he's always on the lookout for faith, and he doesn't find nearly as much of it as you might expect him to, given that he ends up moving in the circles of the religious leaders who engage with him and the people and, like, just, you know, countless people. But he doesn't encounter faith as often as you might think. One of the, I think, you know, last week we talked a bit about the parable of the soils. And Roxanne had used that in relationship to the rich young ruler. But I do think that that is a pretty important parable to describe the sorts of responses that Jesus gets, right? And I think I said this last week. Ultimately, the part of the message of the parable is Jesus trying to explain why he hasn't been as successful as you might have expected. You know, here he is, apparently the Son of God, coming around common storms and raising the dead and healing lepers and just doing these remarkable things. And yet not many people believe in him. You know, what's gone wrong? And Jesus is essentially saying, it's not me, it's you, right? It's not the word. It's not what I'm doing. It's the hearts where this stuff is landing. So there is this really important dynamic between faith and Jesus's miraculous powers, right? The things that he does and the response that it engenders. And there are a wide variety of responses. You know, the religious leaders at one point, you know, in Mark's gospel, at least, you know, Jesus is casting out demons. And instead of thinking to themselves, well, this must be God, they say, well, he must be possessed by a demon himself. That's why he's able to cast out demons. Like, that's their explanation, which is almost as far away from faith in Jesus as you could possibly be. Even the crowds, you know, the crowds are amazed at what Jesus does. And that's not a bad response. It's not it's not the wicked response of the religious leaders, right? Jesus does, in Mark's gospel, does that whole piece about, you know, the blasphemy against the Holy Spirit will be unforgivable, right? And he's talking about it in that context where they've been saying, you're possessed by a demon. That's why you're able to cast out demons. So it's not the wicked response, but the amazement of the crowds isn't faith. It's just amazement. They're amazed at what's happened. They're, you know, they're left in awe. They're asking questions about who is this, or saying, that's amazing and that's wonderful. God's among us. But it doesn't seem to lead to faith. You know, we see that kind of evidenced really in the last week of Jesus's life, when the crowds who are praising him when he comes into the city seem to be the same crowds who are shouting for his crucifixion just a few days later. There doesn't seem to be that the rooting of faith. And the signs that Jesus performs do not automatically lead to faith. You probably experienced this in your life, maybe with friends, or even in your own life, you know, where something kind of amazing's happened and you're like, oh, do I call that a miracle? Was it a miracle or was it just a coincidence? Like, you know, the thing that's happened, and yet we can still often be kind of wondering what it actually means, or it can get explained away. I don't want to denigrate the scientific community. I think they do wonderful work, right? But, you know, like a scientific worldview would say, well, the supernatural can't happen. And so there's explanations given for what's taken place, or it's, you know, something in your mind or whatever the case is. And that can still happen today. So the relationship between the miraculous works and faith is a tricky one, because they can also lead to faith. Jesus does seem to be on the lookout for faith in order for those miracles to happen. I think that's an odd dynamic in the Gospels. There's one point, again, in Mark's Gospel, the Gospel I'm most familiar with, where Jesus is in Nazareth, his hometown, and we're told he couldn't do many miracles because of the lack of faith. So there does seem to be this sense that faith is required for the miracles to happen, although Jesus can obviously do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, right? However he wants to do it. But there is this kind of interplay between the two. You know, so we see it in the story of this woman. She reaches out with faith and Jesus tells her, your faith has saved you, right? That's what's happened here. You know, the disciples cry out to Jesus. I'm not sure what they thought he was going to do, but he calms the storm. The demoniac, or the man who was a demoniac, right, buried beneath all that evil, is saved by Jesus and responds with faith. You know, can I please come with you? So when we're engaging, if I can go back to the first question, we're engaging with, you know, the fostering of faith in the face of those miraculous things. I think a lot of it is to focus on the person of Jesus. To some degree, that was part of the reason why the Pharisees didn't put faith in him. He was from the wrong place. It's not where prophets came from. He was engaged in the sorts of things that they didn't think was particularly prophetic behavior. You know, he quote unquote worked on the Sabbath by healing people. His disciples didn't fast like, you know, others did. There was a bunch of stuff that Jesus did that they were just not really up to, like they didn't like. But it is that focus on Jesus that I think is, and the person of Jesus, that is the critical piece in it. Because ultimately, if I can flip it, when there is no miraculous sign, when there's no miraculous sign, where the storm overwhelms the boat entirely, when the evil remains, when the chronic illness is still there, unbudged at all, not better, but maybe worse, when the child dies, like when those things happen, as they often do, we have to turn to the person of Jesus. But the response of faith throughout Scripture is that very difficult, but very important place of saying God is good and he is worth loving and following and being faithful to, regardless of what I receive in life. That's the place of faith. That's where we find ourselves face to face with Jesus, even though the circumstances of our lives are totally confusing to us. That's the place of faith. And so how we manage that, and how we manage to get to that place where we're able to say, you know, regardless of whether there's any sheep in the pen or fruit on the trees, regardless of whether things get better or worse, I will look to the Lord. That's the place of faith where we want to be. Where, you know, if I could take the story of the woman where she touches Jesus and nothing happens, and Jesus turns to her and says, you still have faith. And for her to go away joyful, happy, content, even though she has not been healed. Now, the stories are indicating, and this gets into the third question, more than just calling people to faith, right? There is that demonstration of who Jesus is. But ultimately, I think the relationship between the miracles and faith is that faith is far more important and ought to be emphasized in our own following after Jesus. Knowing that he is capable and able to handle any situation that we face, but ultimately knowing that it's the encounter with his presence that is most important. And that's not an easy place, is it? In the middle of the storm or in an overwhelming situation or in chronic illness or in desperation, right, the theme of the stories. That's not an easy place to be, but ultimately I think that's the follow on from where this woman's encounter comes and ultimately where her faith is drawn to the surface, right? It's where Jesus affirms the faith that he has heard and that she has demonstrated. And that personal encounter is what really matters. So I think the relationship between faith and miracles is a tricky one. I think we would love Jesus to perform more miracles in our life that are absolutely clear, you know, where we go, yep, that was the demonstration of Jesus's power. And, you know, my life is better, more complete, more whole, more fruitful, longer, whatever it is, more blessed because of it. And yet so often we find that we are ultimately left to listen to and encounter Jesus personally. And it's in that place that faith exists, apart from and outside of the things that Jesus may or may not do in our lives in terms of the miraculous. So I think those two questions are really helpful to kind of talk a bit about the relationship between those two things. And ultimately, you know, to go back to question one, we want to foster and want to help people foster a relationship with Jesus, the good Jesus. You know, when we on Sunday we actually sang that song, you know, Jesus Strong and Kind. We want people to encounter Jesus Strong and Kind, the one who will go looking for you when you're lost, the one who says, "Come to me when you're weak," the one who, you know, says, "Come to me when you need wisdom or guidance." Like, he is strong and he is kind, and we want to foster that relationship because that's actually the most important encounter that we can have. So the final question is this. The sermon wove the four stories together. Are there other lessons in these stories that weren't picked up? It's a good question. It allows me to talk very briefly, and I will try to be brief, about the process of writing a sermon. I was at Moreland College just yesterday. Tuesdays is kind of my day at Moreland College, and I was doing some work on the preaching subject that I'm going to be doing an intensive around, all that sort of stuff. And I was actually talking a little bit in the midst of that about, well, it was under the heading of creative license, but it was basically saying that in our sermons, we often have to make what I call sermonic decisions. We need to make decisions about the things in a story or in a text that we're going to emphasize and the things that we may not emphasize as much because of the application that we want to draw to. There are things that we're going to be able to deal with in great detail and other things that we're just, for the sake of time, we're going to have to move more quickly through. Like, there's all sorts of those kinds of decisions. And, you know, Sunday was no different. Dealing with four stories, there's lots of stuff in them. I think, you know, ultimately the decision that I made, obviously, given that we're following the encounter series and that the encounter series is Jesus' encounter with the desperate, I kind of drew to the forefront the desperation in those four stories, as well as kind of pointing out that I think Matthew, Mark, and Luke, who all tell those stories as if they happened on one day. I'm not saying that they didn't, but they combined them chronologically, right? There's no a few days later or later on or whatever it is. It all seems to happen that same day. I think are held together chronologically because they, shall we say, hold some of those common lessons. So I think, you know, some of the things that I drew it on Sunday are part of that. I think that the link between the miraculous power of Jesus and faith is a pretty important one. I was really struck by the fact that the two examples of faith in the story are not the disciples or the synagogue leader, but a man who had formerly been possessed by a legion of demons and a woman who had spent 12 years with a chronic illness. It's so very Luke, as I said on Sunday. You can go through his gospel, and time again, he has the strangest characters who are the heroes. You know, the unjust judge and the widow who pesters him until he does what's right. The Samaritan. There's just all sorts of examples where you just have the unexpected hero. So it was kind of wonderful to see that see that played out. I hadn't noticed it before, so it was just kind of a nice thing to see. I kind of knew the theme in Luke, but hadn't picked it up there. At any rate, but in terms of other lessons that I think could fruitfully be drawn out of those four stories, I do think that the authority of Jesus is an important part of that. You do see in the fact that these stories are held together in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke all have slightly different purposes that they're drawing out. So the placement within the various Gospels is important. But one of the lessons is, to some degree, the question that the disciples ask, right? Who is this? When Jesus calms the storm. And by the end of the stories, I mean, if you didn't know before chapter 8, you do by the end of chapter 8. Who is this? Well, who else can calm a storm but God? Who else can overwhelm a legion of demons with a word? Well, that's God. Who can raise someone from the dead? Well, that's God. I mean, to some degree, the miracle of the woman touching his cloak is the the least amazing, right? Like raising someone from the dead, casting an army of demons, calming a storm, and those are kind of next level identity miracles. They're the sorts of things where you kind of have to sit back and say, this is not just some run-of-the-mill prophet, right? Not that many prophets did a lot of miraculous things, to tell you the truth, but right, he's like, this is no run-of-the-mill prophet. This is like, he's either the greatest prophet ever, or he may possibly be someone else, right? And so there, it raises the question of Jesus's identity. And I think that's pretty important. It does raise, you know, I did talk a bit about the power of Jesus, but it does talk about his authority. You know, if, you know, these gospels were written for people who were following Jesus, then part of their lesson is to say, you know, this is who you're following, not just in terms of his identity, but the authority that he has. You know, even if it's difficult right now, even if you're facing persecution and hardship, you don't want to give up following Jesus. I mean, the authority that he has, even in the story, this is before, of course, his crucifixion and resurrection, right? And if you'd come to faith in Jesus, it was most likely because you've grappled with his death and his resurrection. But these stories alone say something about the person you're following. He has the authority over life and over death, over the demonic, over, you know, sickness and illness and storm. Like, he has the authority. So I think that there's a couple of those kinds of lessons that can be really, really drawn out. As we've talked a little bit about today, I think that interaction between the miraculous and the faith, or lack thereof, is something that you can kind of recognize in the midst of that. And I do think there's also something, and I did touch on this a little bit on Sunday, there is something about Jesus's care. In Mark's account, I keep going back to Mark's account. As I said, it's the gospel I'm most familiar with. The disciples wake Jesus in the boat and they say, you know, Master, don't you care that we're about to drown? I can't remember which commentator it was now, but one of the commentators that I was reading basically drew attention to that question. Don't you care? You know, you think theologically about that and you think, well, the whole reason Jesus was in the boat in the first place, the whole reason he'd come to earth is because he cares. But then the stories that follow are just a demonstration of how much he cares. So he calms the storm, kind of to say, yes, I do care that you're about to drown. Then he rescues and saves the demoniac, who, as I've said, cannot ask for help, but rescues him nonetheless. A Gentile overwhelmed by these demonic forces. He heals this woman who touches him and interacts with her, and then raises Jairus' daughter from the dead. Like, does he care? The answer is yes. Yes, he does. It's hard to read the stories, you know, particularly in Mark's account, where the question kind of frames the day. That same theme is found in Luke's account as well. So I think those would be some things that you could certainly engage with. I think... You know, the idea that Jesus's power is demonstrated by those who can't actually necessarily even ask for it, or who don't have a lot of faith. I think there's something remarkable in that. We've seen some of that played out in the Encounter series, if you've been following along in one of our life groups. So again, a handful of things that you could draw out, I think, quite fruitfully in those four stories that relate to our discipleship, what it means to follow after Jesus and whatnot. So thanks again for those questions. Just certainly enjoyed going a little bit deeper. This is a bit of a companion podcast to our Sunday sermons, an opportunity for us to continue that conversation throughout the week. Trust that you're enjoying the series, whether you're doing this just on Sundays and Wednesdays, or the Big Three, or whether you're also engaged in a life group. The reports I'm hearing from life groups is that the series has been really well received. People are really engaged with it. They're enjoying that is something different. It's a very different way for us to do life group material. So it's all good. So I trust you're enjoying us. This coming Sunday, Rox will be preaching again. I can't remember off the top of my head what the theme is, to tell you the truth. So it'll be a surprise for all of us. Well, I'll probably know before Sunday, but nonetheless, looking forward to that. And I hope you can join me again next week for the Big Three. Until then, God bless.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are the Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymer Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.